The book of Joshua today, again, carrying on in chapter 5. And just a short introduction, preparing to live in the promised land, which they were doing, and preparing to live out the Christian life, have a number of things in common. But one thing in particular is that they both reveal the importance of obedience to God, even in what we might consider insignificant details. Watch out for the little things. We fail in the little things. And sometimes they become much bigger, but the failing is in the little things. Joshua chapter 5, verse 1. So it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. We can take confidence in that because God goes before us, He's taking the courage out of the enemy. And that'll take the strength out of a person, that'll take the wisdom out of a person, and they're really not fit for battle. So obviously it was God that gave the children of Israel such a reputation. It was God that gave them such a reputation. It was their obedience that made it possible for them to live under the influence of that reputation. We have God's reputation, but without obedience to God, we don't get to live under the power of that reputation. But what was it that they did that caused God to give them such favor? Obedience. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. It wasn't them doing great things for God. It wasn't them thinking beyond the boundaries, doing things that would stretch them. It wasn't them praying a certain prayer. It wasn't them having great faith. It was just them having faith in their great God and learning to follow along in His ways. Or better said, even having faith in God who is great and learning how to follow along in His ways. In their case, it was simply walking in the way He had made for them in a place He had given to them. Walking in the way He had made for them. He cleared the path. They were scared to death. They were still there, but they were scared to death. And He did this in the place that He'd made for them. Joshua 5, verses 2 to 5. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, "Make flint knives for yourself, and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time." So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt, who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way, after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. Why? Inconvenient? What was the deal? The rite of circumcision marked Israel's position as God's covenant people, not the ones who were keeping their side of the covenant, the ones whom God was keeping His covenant with. We need to realize that. Sometimes we think it's about us and keeping the promises of God. It isn't. It's about God and keeping His promises to us and us being willing to receive that gift of His kept promises to us and walking in it. Not just believing it with our head, but walking it out. Everyday life. To be circumcised here in this place was risky. God, however, had provided for their safety. What did we read? Their heart melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. They had time to heal. You would not want to do that to an army and then send them out to the battlefield. But there was no battle. They were too busy hiding. See how God provided for them? And see how they didn't provide for themselves in the wilderness. We looked at it last week. They didn't rehearse this with their children. It was a mark. It was a sign. It was a time you'd never forget. Perfect. We need that time to remember God's faithfulness to us. Regardless of the health benefits around circumcision, and especially for these people wandering in the wilderness, there is another connotation to it. It has to do with matters which steal our confidence before God and our courage before man. It's a matter of heart, specifically an impure heart. We're going to look around at some scriptures here. The first one is from Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 16. Therefore, circumcise the foreskins of your heart and be stiff-necked, no longer unteachable. Well, I like to believe this about God, or I think that about God. You know what? If it differs with how he has revealed himself here in the book, sorry, you're wrong. No more argument. You're wrong. God is who he is, and he has revealed himself perfectly to us. Regardless of what we think we'd like to believe, which is generally based on because it's more convenient. Second reading is from Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 4. Jeremiah 4, verse 4. Circumcise yourselves to the Lord, and take away the foreskins of your hearts, you men of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my fury come forth like fire and burn so that no one can quench it because of the evil of your doings. You see, if you don't do that, then you're going to be in the same place these people were in the promised land that Israel was about to push out. You'd be the one frightened. You'd be the one scared. No courage. Courage before man will be gone because of your hypocrisy before God. The courage before man is gone because of our hypocrisy before God. Some preparation needs to happen. Sometimes we get all gung-ho and it's good. I mean, door-to-door stuff is good, you know? And you're ready to go door-to-door, and you do all these preparations and you get all these arguments established and all this kind of stuff. That's not the preparation that's necessary. You need a pure, clean testimony and a good understanding of how to share it and a life right before God, and you're good. You're good to go. And if your head's not full of all the things you have planned on how you're going to convince somebody about Christ, he is able to work through your mind to convince them better than you ever could. But coming back from a right life with him. Colossians chapter 2. Over into the New Testament. If you wonder what I'm saying is true, when you can pick it out two or three places, it absolutely is. Okay, Colossians chapter 2, verses 10 to 15. And you are complete in him who is the head of all principality and power. In him you were also circumcised with the circumcision made without hands by putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. Buried with him in baptism, in which you also were raised with him through faith in the working of God who raised him from the dead. And you, being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses, having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us, that is, trying to keep the law and never being able to. And he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. Having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. To the people of Joshua's generation, this circumcision not only declared that these were God's covenant people, but that the old generational thing of disobedience was severed. This generation had not been circumcised yet because the previous generation lived in such disobedience. Well, they were in a jam, and it was awkward, and all the things that God had them to do, it was so difficult. There's always reasons we have for what we do, but there's no excuse for disobedience. All kinds of reasons, but no excuse for it. Romans 2, verse 29. Romans 2, verse 29. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. Joshua 5:9. So this is what God is looking for. An exterior, any exterior act of devotion or commitment is to be lived out throughout the entirety of one's life. Otherwise, it's just a show. It's just a pretense. Everybody that you go around or live around is impressed, but God is not impressed. And if God is impressed, in other words, you're being obedient to Him, others will see Him living through you in ways that you don't have to monitor, you don't have to figure, you can't count it, you can't add up how many doors you knocked on, or how many times you came to church, or how much you gave. All of that doesn't matter. They will see God, and it will come to you in times of distress. Joshua 5:9. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "This day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you, and the reproach of Egypt's worldliness. Therefore the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day." The Lord is encouraging Joshua and consequently the people. Keep in mind, as we go along, that every act of obedience on the part of Israel is met with an act of encouragement on the part of God. Every time. You obey, He'll encourage. You obey, He'll encourage. You disobey, He'll look at you. Things will get quiet. And you may even hear a... You've heard me say this before, but sometimes people wonder why they can't hear God speaking. Well, it's because He's waiting for you to listen to the last thing He told you. Sometimes. Not always, but sometimes that's what it is. He's not going to keep talking. He's not going to keep giving you revelation if you're doing nothing with it, other than storing it up so you can feel spiritual. He gives His word to you for the sake of others. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You'd get saved and He'd take you home. If you're still here, He's giving you His word, not so that you can feel better, which hopefully you do, and apply it. He's giving it to you for others around you, where they live. So, every act of obedience is, on the part of Israel, is met with an act of encouragement on the part of God. When we look at God in this light, calling Him our Heavenly Father seems like a natural thing to do. Just a natural thing to do. The place of their encampment is called Gilgal. In Hebrew, Gal means to roll. Because of their obedience, God has rolled away their reproach. What we are seeing here is faith with works, or faith that actually works. Faith that actually works. Gilgal became quite a significant place. It was the place where the Israelites camped the first night after crossing the Jordan River. It was their first night in the Promised Land, a land that had been promised to their fathers from the days of Abraham. Generations. Be faithful in this generation, because you don't know the generations that are coming. And so your act of faithfulness is marked by God, regardless of whether you think it's much or little. Doesn't matter. It's an act of faithfulness. Be faithful, because you do not know the plan of God. Your job of being a believer before God is probably a whole lot simpler than you think it is. But we stress about it, we try to measure it, and the whole thing gets very complicated and very awkward. Like that lady years ago in a church in Ladysmith, and they were having an altar call. There was a missionary there, and everybody was going to the front, and she's standing there and saying, "Oh Lord, I'll do anything you want me to do." And there was a tug on her pant leg, and she looked down, and there was her little boy, about 2 years old, 2 or 3 years old, tugging on her pant leg. And the word that entered her heart was, "Raise the boy to know me." That was the job. Raise the boy to know me. Trust me, that's not a simple job. That was her task. Gilgal was the place in which Joshua circumcised all the people who had been born in the wilderness during the 40 years of their wandering after they left Egypt. It was the place in which Joshua had what we might term as his fortified camp, and to which he and his army constantly returned after each other expeditions against the inhabitants of the land. It was where the women, children, and cattle and goods were kept safe. It was the place where they celebrated the first Passover they kept in the Promised Land. It was the place where Saul, the first king of Israel, was proclaimed. It was there that the manna ceased to fall. God will spoon-feed us for a while, and then He will wean us so that we can learn to feed ourselves Bible teaching that is feeding the sheep is good, but it is not to be done at the expense of the sheep learning to feed themselves. If I do anything, I want to help you to understand the scripture so you can feed yourself. I'll feed you. I'll spoon feed you if I need to for a time. And then feed on the word. Daily, discipline, feed on the word. Gilgal was about a mile, 1.5 miles east of Jericho and 5.5 miles west of the Jordan River. And it came to pass, chapter 5, verse 13, and it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" This verse should have actually been at the beginning of chapter 6, or the two chapters should have been one, because its thought is out of place with chapter 5. It doesn't matter. It's the Word of God. Translated from Hebrew to Greek, from Greek to English, these things happen. I wonder what was going on through Joshua's mind as he contemplated Jericho. Was he scared when he saw how well fortified it was? Was he, as a previous general of Moses, contemplating how he could take the place? Was he devastated or devising a battle scheme? Either way, God was there to direct or redirect. Know that. God is there in our lives to either direct or redirect. How many people here never make a mistake? Now's your chance, dear. No? Direct or redirect? Are you redirectable? That's a sign that you're teachable, that you can make a mistake and humbly come back around and do it right. I wonder what was going through Joshua's mind. Some things to note about this. Look at the verse. The man standing opposite Joshua. Capital M. I believe. Yes. Capital M. If we follow the conversation through to chapter 6, verse 2, we'll see that it was the Lord talking to him. The fact that the Lord was standing opposite Joshua instead of standing beside him is very significant. Standing beside him would infer that the Lord was on his side. But the Lord knew what Joshua had in mind. And so he stood in front of him, facing him. "What's up, Josh?" I know what you're thinking, Josh. What's up?" And so he faced him. If you're facing God, it means you're just about to have a redirect. But the Lord knew what Joshua was on his mind. And just closing with a chapter. You know what? Yeah. Verse 14, last verse. So he said, but as commander... Asked him if he was on his side or the other side. He said, "No, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" Basically, the Lord told him that he didn't come to take sides. He came to take over. We would do ourselves a great favor to lay out before God all the plans we have to serve the Lord. Be assured that if we are living in Jesus, for Jesus, we will be completely occupied with His plans for us. If we're living in Jesus, for Jesus, we'll be completely occupied with His plans for us. Not our plans that we're trying to draw Him into. His plans for us that He's trying to draw us into. And so we're confronted on a regular basis of who we think is in charge. Anyway, next week we're going to get into the next verse, which involves the idea of holy ground and battling.